And it's time for another Techie Talk with State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy post-Nor'easter. How are you, Techie?
Doing good, Joe. Thankfully, things are okay in my neighborhood, but I do understand a lot of folks have lost power and had a pretty chilly night.
Indeed. I know you were down at the O'Brien Towers situation yesterday after the roof came off. What did it look like down there?
I actually didn't go down. I have a rule that don't walk into disaster zones when other people are working. I don't want to get into the way, but I did talk to James Marathis, the Housing Authority Director. I talked to a couple of tenants on the phone, and Queensland Asian Resources was providing translation services for an emergency tenant meeting yesterday. So I checked in with them as well. I checked in with like three or four different sources, you can tell through the course of the day. And you know, obviously the Housing Authority has done an incredible job of just getting people in there right away to assess damage to the Quincy Inspectional Services and to get the elevator up and running, try to patch water damage as much as possible and stabilize the building on electricity through a generator. The objective was try to ensure habitability and safety of the tenants. My understanding is parts of the seventh floor where the roof came off, it didn't come off the whole building, it came off a portion of the building. It had some water damage and it had to relocate some residents for a short term while QHA workers are in there, you know, patching it up and ensuring that it's properly sealed. I was told that fortunately underneath the roof itself, they actually had another steel plating, which didn't stop all the water, but it could have been considerably worse. It was entirely exposed to open air. So the roof is relatively new. I heard something between 6 months to 2 years, depending who you ask. So there was a lot of surprise here at how quickly the wind blew it off. You know, some questions about whether there was a lip on the roof that allowed the wind to catch it. As you can see, you know, the pink stuff, there was a lot of insulation involved, which is obviously very important these days on energy efficiency and conservation. But we'll see how it goes. The O'Brien Tower is actually a federally funded building. This is what have always been my very big challenges over there, is that the state doesn't fund that building. I can't use state money to address any issues there. It has to be done by federal money. If we're trying to do any kind of state funds, it has to go to Quincy Housing Authority and kind of a broader stroke approach. But you know, the other senior housing complexes, like I did security cameras for a couple of years of state funds of Quincy Housing Authority to upgrade the security to all their properties, not just O'Brien Towers. But in this instance, you know, I did reach out to the federal delegation of Congressman Lynch and the Senators Markey and Warren's offices, informed them the situation. They have contacted Quincy Housing Authority and providing what assistance they can. So I suspect in the next few days, as this kind of sorts out a little more at the Fed level and what funding can be acquired on an emergency basis. And of course, the Red Cross is always available to help if things get a little tougher and more residents need to relocate. But right now, my understanding so far is that things are stable, but a whole lot of work still needs to be done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Jim told me that he's going to go for another full roof replacement at some point in the not too distant future. And I'm assuming the federal government's going to want to make sure that this time they get their money's worth.
And it's also a question about the contractor itself. If they can make a determination, the contractor put the roof, did a poor job, given the circumstances where we live. I mean, you know, Quincy Housing Authority could potentially sue the contractor if, you know, Quincy Inspectional Services or Housing Authority can make some determination that this is a fault of construction, because I mean, it's 6 months old-ish. They shouldn't be popping off like that. And given its location, it's pretty obvious, you know, that there is a high wind situation over there.
Yes, you can walk out and step into the ocean if you'd like. It's right there.
For people who don't know where the location is, it's right on the edge of Town Brook. You can see the forward bridge from the building, and it actually sits right on the water. So a nor'easter like this, when the wind spins the way it does and, you know, sits on us like a blanket for prolonged periods of time, you know, the wind, the water can surge over. So those remember the March 2017 storms. I made a trek out there the day after the water actually did recede. I didn't want to try to get myself into a situation where I'm trapped with a car in a flood zone, because now I'm just creating problems for other people that really need help. So after the waters receded a bit, I could actually see the damage. And that was a high tide situation in 2017. So we were fortunate this time this nor'easter hit in between the two big tides.
Yeah.
This was a high tide situation. We've been looking at March 2017, or a likelihood where the Southern Peninsula, you know, Germantown, Adams Shore, Marymount, and House Neck would have been heavily flooded, and likely House Neck would probably be an island again if this was a high tide situation.
Right. So, you know, there is a saving grace here for sure. Nonetheless, it's inconvenient at best.
Yeah, and the city's put a lot of money, as well as the state and federal money, into the seawall reconstruction and shoring up and improvements that's still ongoing. So again, you know, this was a high tide situation. A lot of the effort by the city and all the state and federal money that's gone into it would have been for waste, given the fact there's still an ongoing process on seawall upgrades.
Yeah. Speaking of state and federal money, what's going on Beacon Hill?
Well, today is Thursday. So we're actually starting debate at 1 o'clock. It's a bit after 10 now. So 1 o'clock, they're going to start our virtual debate regarding utilizing $3.6 billion of a combination of fiscal 21 surplus and some of the federal money that's sitting in trust. I won't lie, this was a little bit of a different situation, because I'm actually used to seeing budgetary items as one or the other in a bill, not both things in the same bill.
Right, yeah.
So we had about 12-ish hours or so to get amendments together, and it became a bit of a long night Monday night into Tuesday, as myself and staff just spent a night trying to figure out how to properly draft amendments into the bill. And then we spent a better part of yesterday and into this morning now on reviewing amendments, because advocates, of course, are emailing in heavy, heavy, heavy numbers to try to get me to co-sponsor amendments. Obviously, I can't get to all of them. Debate starts in now at 1 o'clock. I mean, yeah. Let's be realistic about this, folks. Email me at 1 a.m. asking for an amendment sign on. But 1 o'clock start the next day as I try to decipher these emails, plus, you know, constituent emails and committee emails. You know, we got to be realistic here, people. I mean, it's, I think people seem to think I have a small army working for me that has nothing to do but sit all night long to sort this stuff out. When I'm staring at things at midnight, like, what are we doing here?
Right.
So obviously we're really focused in on key issues for Quincy, and we have issues that the Asian caucus has proposed. And obviously, you know, we have certain key advocates that, you know, we're trying to see if we can help out with. So it's about $3.6 billion. I'm going to stare at my cheat sheet now. That about $600 million is heading to a category of housing. These are categories. We're not actually dictating specific things,
right,
in terms of like targeted, like Quincy numbers. Environment and climate change mitigation, $350 million. Economic development-ish items of $770 million. Workforce development, $750 million. Health and human services, $765 million. And education, $265 million. However, the way they drafted this bill, even though I described six buckets, those things are subdivided out to another six buckets. So, for example, in the housing situation, we put in $600 million for housing. They already subdivided buckets, again, six ways. We put $150 million for supportive housing services. So it's not one line item at $600 million. It's actually six line items at that total $600 million.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, for example, they do $100 million for whole affordable housing. For example, climate change, they do $100 million to create an offshore wind development, as well as $100 million for water infrastructure improvements. So, you know, it sounds like a lot of money, but when you think about the needs of the whole state, it isn't that much money.
Yeah. I mean, is this all one-time money, Tacky?
This is one-time money. So the other trick in this is the fact that we're going to propose new amendments. We're going to be drawing down for the remaining of the trust. But right. Given the fact that we're looking to spend the state surplus first, which is non-restricted money,
mm-hmm.
To try to add to the bottom line, which I suspect they might be adding a little bit to the bottom line.
Okay.
They would have to draw some of the Fed money out, but the Fed has to fit in certain buckets.
Okay.
Welcome to the mystery of accounting.
Yeah, well, it raises the question, how do these things become self-sustaining after the money's gone?
It's none. These are all one-time programs.
Okay.
It's clear by leadership that we are not doing sustainable programs.
Okay.
For example, you know, I got like $300,000 for QCAP for an amendment to capital improvements to their Southwest food pantry.
Yep.
COVID has revealed that, you know, they need massive modernization, and given food security, insecurity is going to continue for quite some time, given inflation and job numbers in certain industries are still not back fully online. You know, and Quincy is still a working class city. The food pantry service going up, and COVID has now changed how we do food pantries immensely. How we change food pantries. So You know, that's a one-time cost.
Okay.
Myself and the caucus has not asked for any money that is not a one-time cost. It may even look like the program we look at amendments, but in thinking way through how we drafted it, they're not. They're one-time issue. So a lot of people have been very cautious in trying to draft amendments indicating these are non-recurring programs.
All right. Okay. So basically strike while the iron's hot and benefit from it and move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the argument we have to make right off the bat before we actually the substantive policy piece is this a one-time cost?
Yeah.
Because if that's the area, then we can make a substantive argument.
Yeah. Interesting. Is this typically the way it should be done? Do you think it should be all grouped into one big lump sum?
It is an interesting attempt I've never seen to do.
Okay.
Then again, I've never seen us get $5 million in free. Well, not free. That's completely wrong. Strings tied to it, Fed money. So this is a little bit peculiar, given the times that we spent a whole 18 plus months now in peculiar. So every time I tell people I've seen it all, I've really not seen it all.
Just when you think you've seen it all, right? Yeah.
So it is a little surprising in the sense of the way it's set up, because we did close the books for FY21. All bills are paid.
Yes.
Outstanding bills for 2021. So this extra money we have after rainy day deposit, you know, is a kind of a unique opportunity for us to try to address one-time issues local level. So.
Okay. All right. So it's a good thing. It's just an awkward way of doing it, but it's a good thing.
And that's correct. It is a little awkward, but it is a unique opportunity for all reps and senators to try to get some one-time cost done in the communities, as well as beef up one-time costs associated with COVID.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's the timeline now for this negotiation? Is it something that you're trying to get done by year's end or legislative end?
Yeah, correct. I think there's an attempt to try to get this done by November 17th deadline.
Okay.
Because of November 17th, we stop formal sessions. The speaker can continue our sessions past November 17th if he feels he needs to. But he'd like to keep the schedule the best they can unless a crisis comes up. So, you know, the House is going to try and get this done today. Hopefully the Senate does it quickly and it heads the conference committee. We're scheduled for debate at 1 o'clock today, and we're scheduled for debate straight through Friday as a contingency on this goes deep into the night.
Okay.
Into tomorrow morning. For those who ever try to be on the phone far too long, you just picture trying to be on the phone from 1 p.m. and just stay there. Being in person, to be honest, can be a challenge, but at least you're sitting somebody next to the chit-chat with. And people may catch things you didn't catch in the chamber because, you know, it's a big chamber and paying attention, sometimes things slip through part of that. It's always nice to have a friend sitting next to you who's also paying attention and maybe caught something you didn't.
Yes.
So it's kind of a very challenging format, particularly on these type of debates where things could be flying fast or it could be moving so slow that we're trying to figure out what's really going on around here. It's kind of like a car with bad clutch.
That's a great analogy. Yes. What gear am I in?
Yeah. And next thing you know, you're moving at 70 and then suddenly you gear down to 5. So it's for new members, this is a very difficult lifestyle to operate on. But us have been doing this for far too long. It feels like, you know, you kind of get used to the way the pace works.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, are these open to the public, Jackie?
You can watch us online on the state website at masslegislature.gov. Just click on the front of the page, the session we'll watch. In this case, it's the House session. And you can watch us doing as much as possible. But obviously, because of the nature of amendment review, it'll be offline conversations by text, telephone.
Yeah.
Excuse me, text, telephone, email, as opposed to in-person chase down of your House Ways and Means chair, as well as the House Ways and Means staff. So I'm in the process actually now of typing a very short memo. Two ways in sort of a short blurb indicating what each of my amendments do to try to provide them some general understanding what we're trying to accomplish here. And, you know, if there's more questions and they like it, obviously they'll follow up with a phone call or a text message saying, hey, we need to chat.
Right, right. Okay. All right. This is the process. This is how we get things done.
It is, particularly in this world. As we all know, the building's still closed, so it's still essential personnel access only.
Right.
And I do try to abide by the rules the best I can. I think I like tell folks, it's important to try to consider the safety of other people as opposed to worrying about your own needs.
What can you tell us about this proposed premium bonus for essential workers, Jackie?
They set aside about $500 million that is given to the governor to administer using currently on the bill 300% of poverty level as the cutoff point of salary. So you're making 300% of poverty level. Poverty level is about $12,800-ish for a single person.
Okay.
Multiply out for households, pretty simple math. And then, you know, 300% of whatever that is based on your household. And your salary is, you know, you get up to $2,000, kind of a bonus pay situation.
Okay.
$500 ain't that much money when you think about it.
No, not in the big scheme of things, yeah.
No, it's going to vanish pretty quick. I did file an amendment to increase that to 500% of poverty level.
Oh.
Because several of the public employee unions were very concerned that, you know, 300% may not reflect a large enough of the folks that were actually on the front lines. So these are folks that are actually like in the lines, like meaning people that was looking front facing every single day, practically, where they have a high exposure to the public.
Yeah. Grocery stores, public transportation, healthcare workers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So some of us, you know, had the good fortune of working virtually in this format, or finding ourselves in an office where it's just you.
Right.
But it's different if you're, you know, in a high exposure area where you're constantly in front of people trying to help us out. As I tell people, we should always be very thankful and say thank you to people who get us our food, provide us with essential services such as, you know, folks that get us our clean supply,
mm-hmm.
and people stocking the shelves.
Yep.
And we don't think people appreciate them as much as we appreciate them this past year, just as important as people who are trying to keep us alive, you know, healthcare workers and doctors, yeah. scientists and so forth. So, you know, we thought we'd try to do something. We'd like to do something while not, you know, giving you like a full time and a half or something like that. Like, you know, provide something to recognize that we do recognize your hard work. The challenge, of course, is that $500 isn't that much when you start adding up the number of people that have been out there for us.
Yeah, and a lot of them are still unemployed, you know, even today and struggling with that.
Yeah, you know, the unemployment rate is kind of funky because, you know, it's floating under 6%. You know, so that's not bad if you're under 6%. It's not, you know, not like pre-pandemic, but, you know, we were looking at like, you know, double digits at one point. So, I mean, it's all relative.
And that might not reflect the true picture either, as you're well aware.
Yeah, the unemployment number is only based on people taking benefits, not actually people who are not working. So right. It doesn't count seasonal workers. It doesn't count people who are unable to work or for reasons. For example, maybe you acquired a severe disability, but you're still categorized as able-bodied worker, for example. Yep. That does happen. And some people fall off the grid. Right. You know, they retire at a younger age, for example, or, you know, they find themselves moving to another state. I mean, the unemployment number is always a bit tricky issue. But hospitality industry is still moving slowly, particularly inside the city of Boston. It's hard to find a place to have lunch in the city. A few times I had to go into the office to get my mail and do some office grabs. You know, most of the places in downtown are still closed in terms of restaurants and retail. So, you know, it's getting better. The suburban communities have withstood this better. Obviously, the Cape, the Berkshires, and some of the tourist zones have endured this a little better because of regional, seasonal employment and economic impact. And obviously, the students have returned as well. Some of the college communities have, you know, seen a little bit of a benefit from those folks' returns. And leaf peeping season is now, even though it's been kind of slow because the weather's been warm and the trees got a ton of water this year.
Yes.
But we're in leaf peeping season, and then we hit the holidays, and that's we'll see how this goes with the Delta variant and now Delta Plus variant. Delta Plus. And of course, booster shots are rolling out. And of course, you know, I tell people sanitation, you know, mask wearing, and try to keep away from each other if you can, just to reduce the possibility of contact spread. Again, it's a person to person disease.
Right.
So you got the flu, you got the common cold, you have all kinds of other viruses. My favorite is, of course, the norovirus. People love the norovirus. My least favorite type of illness.
Yes, no, it's kind of become known as like the cruise ship virus, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it does still make its way around. I had some friends who did pick it up from children. exposed to that last year, despite mask wearing and all the other precautions. It can still happen. So I mean, just because it can still happen doesn't mean you should try to not stop it from happening.
Correct. Yeah.
I love the line when people say, oh, it's going to happen anyway. Well, I shouldn't need to do anything. I'm like, shouldn't you try to reduce the odds? It's an interesting conversation I have with folks sometimes.
It all depends on your mindset, I suppose. anything on redistricting to update us on, Techie?
Yeah, we did the vote yesterday. Last week was redistricting debate, and it was actually a fairly tame debate. Not a lot of amendments were done. Some on-the-floor tweaking was done in the city of Boston, out in the Orange area, and a little bit in Essex County. The House in particular, I took advantage of people leaving their seats to subdivide it out. One of the drawbacks of having a non-rep in a redistricting year is that there's no interest to protect the seat that's currently there.
Mm.
So when I leave, and I will leave someday, let's hope that I should time my departure after redistricting.
Gotcha. Yep.
So
know exactly where they lie. Yeah.
Yeah. So at least there's somebody to advocate to try to keep the district intact in Quincy.
Yeah.
So there's always, this is, people can decide on their own career, how they want to manage it. But, we have all these 8 people in the House that's, departed or departing this year, the House. The Senate has a minimum of 3 members thus far departing this year.
Okay.
But the same year. As they run for election for something else or they retire.
Yep.
So the departure is actually end of next year, but realistically speaking, it started.
Right.
So, it's going to be interesting. We basically more than doubled the number of majority seats. The Senate, I'm going to say flat out, caved the pressure on crafting yet another majority seat, but also kind of untweaked, I won't name the seats because I don't want to be that rude, but untweaked a greater majority seat out there that was close to majority, but wasn't quite there yet, but they kind of dismantled that a little. So, I know the papers, can beat us up pretty badly, but they also like pick and choose what they're looking at and do a real full analysis of what was going on. You guys are welcome at home to look at the maps and if you know the demographics of who lives there, the socioeconomics, as well as the racial makeup. So you can kind of figure what really happened.
Right. Yeah. If you're from the area and you know where people live, you can see it pretty plainly.
Mm-hmm. And since we did census blocks, the bill was actually very difficult to figure out because as opposed to naming precincts like we've done in the past, it just lists a bunch of numbers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, numbers don't tell the story. There's people behind those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So each block is a people that live in an area, and that block has a series of numbers.
Right. Alrighty. Stay tuned for that. Let's talk a little bit about things happening here in your district in Quincy and events you'd like to attend maybe in toward the end of the year.
Well, the Dove has their Harvesting Hope event this Saturday,
yep.
Friday evening, tomorrow evening. So people feel another need to donate to a charitable organization, a domestic violence shelter in Quincy, would be a good choice. Mark Leonardwood Association has the Pumpkin Spice Festival scheduled for Saturday, but regretfully, it looks like it's going to be another rainy day.
I know.
So we'll push it off to the Sunday following, which I believe is November 7th. So up in Bishop Fields, 12 o'clock-ish start, for an afternoon family fun, quite simple. So the people are interested in doing that. There's the holiday fair in Hell's Neck, a congregational church. I believe that's the 13th. It's like a 9 o'clock start. It's just an early morning, late morning, early afternoon affair there. Notice clearly states that they will engage in some level of social distancing and limited people entering at one time.
Okay.
But if you don't feel you are comfortable to go partake in the fair, they're another organization looking for donations. And as we go into holiday season, the food pantries are going to have a higher intake. So, obviously the supermarkets provide a means for you to donate some food, social services, Jerrytown Neighborhood Center, as well as QCAP. So, as we head into holiday season, you have a couple of dollars to spare or willing to, buy a can or other goods, or you make donations of things like diapers, for example, as a short supply item that's in need for families. You guys can all consider what you want to do.
Yeah, every organization is doing good work. Salvation Army, I know, also has programs that you can donate to as well. And there is going to be colder weather. What does the fuel assistance program from the state look like this year, Techie?
Well, generally, the fuel assistance program, we start with the federal money first and then okay. back with the state as we go along. I know it's been a bit of a chill recently, but, you know, the weather here is kind of funky. We never know what's going to happen. So, I mean, generally, it's about $20+ million we can fed fuel assistance. You can apply that through Quincy Community Action Programs, through fuel cap. It's, again, income-driven guidelines. So, you have to demonstrate you meet the income guidelines, but, you know, the cap agency can walk you through whether you qualify or not. And if you're not sure, you should at least try. The worst can happen is the status quo.
Yeah, there's no downside. It doesn't cost you anything. It might benefit you, even if it's just a one-time benefit. Anything helps.
Yeah, same thing for food assistance. I mean, I know it's a food security and SNAP program for those of us a little bit older, knows them as food stamp program. It's amazing how that program works because it's income driven. So a lot of people qualify, but it isn't like you're getting $40 a month.
Right.
You may get $30 a month or $20 a month. And, you know, that can be a good supplement for you to, assist in the higher cost of food. Right now, supply chain continues to be a complete disaster in terms of cargo shipping into the country. And that's cargo shipping out of the country. It actually moves both directions.
Yes.
It's us getting stuff in and us getting stuff out. So, you guys all seen the news. Inflation's here, combination of higher wages and supply chain is a recipe for more price hikes. And if you can get away without having to get too extravagant for this Christmas holiday, the most important thing is we're all here together right now, given the challenging circumstance we had the last year and a half.
Yeah, a lot of folks, I think, are hoping that now with the vaccination approved for younger children, that will, further lower the new cases and the positivity rate in the state.
Yeah, it's going to change the numbers a little bit because the way I've been looking at the vaccination numbers has been 18 and above.
Yeah.
Prior to 18 above, it was everyone over 21 and above. So, this is kind of one of the challenges of the numbers because it's going to look like our vaccination rate isn't that high because right now we're closing in on nearly 80% single dose and almost 70% double dose. But once you throw the children in, it's going to go a smaller percentage because he's added to the bigger end of the pool.
Right. Yeah.
So be cautious of looking at these numbers, folks, because now we've added more people to it. Obviously, the percentage is going to shift down on vaccination numbers. It's percentages of vaccination numbers because the children were calculated prior.
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of like the odds in the lottery. The more people to play, the less chance you have to win.
Something like that, yeah. But I mean, but of course, having the adult population now, it's actually the teenagers plus adult population, closing on 80% single vaccination and, closing on 70% full vaccination in Massachusetts. It's basically us, Vermont and Puerto Rico, but the highest vaccination areas of the state, and the country. Puerto Rico's over 80% single dose and well over 73% second dose. So, Puerto Rico's an island, it's 3.5 million people or so, but they took the super duper serious, clearly, on getting vaccinations up, and like some other parts of this country. And we all heard the boosters pursuant to CC recommendation. You get more than one, over 65, as well as, immune compromise. Definitely make those calls to your doctors to see if it's okay to get your booster. You're comfortable. You can get a shot like anywhere now. it's literally like every CVS, every doctor's office, every hospital, every community health center, you make a phone call there, to try to accommodate you. And, people still doing walk-ins, particularly in the pharmacies.
Yes.
Not required. Yep.
Some are giving flu and COVID shots at the same time even. So absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's safe to do. I got my flu shot as well. So, I did that. And obviously I will get a booster once we get to my age bracket. Fortunately, my mom is immune compromised as well as the correct age. So she meets both. And, she got her booster earlier in October. So was it late September? I'm losing track of dates, but it was definitely 6 months out. And, talk again about whether we should do another one 6 months out. So people ask, well, what's the deal with the boosters? So the boosters provide an increased antibodies. Everybody knows that at this point, right? So antibodies can help fend off the Delta variant. Let's call it what it is now. It's Delta territory. So COVID, 19 delta starts floating around. So it helps fend it off. But after a period of time, because there's no need to fight any viruses, because there's nothing in your body will start to reduce the number of antibodies there, because it's just wasting energy making antibodies. We're not doing nothing but hanging out.
Right.
So obviously antibody numbers will go down depending on the person. I mean, every person's different, and different vaccines. The mRNA vaccines increase antibody counts for longer periods in traditional vaccine manufacturing. So J&J is a traditional process. So does that mean you have no ability to fight the virus? No, because the big question is whether or not your body retains memory of the vaccine in the long term. So should the virus show up, your body gears up its defenses because it has a blueprint of how to fight it. But as opposed to taking that risk in terms of blueprint to fight it, the idea is that the more people would have high antibody levels, even if the virus hits you, it dies with you and doesn't transmit again.
Right. Yep. Yeah. The whole idea is to end the pandemic status of this thing.
Yeah. And by having high antibody counts with the general population, prevents the virus from spreading, because if you're vaccinated and you get infected, unless you get very ill, which there is a small percentage, mm-hmm. 0.03%, like 0.03% gets severely ill, something in that zone. The virus won't spread. It'll be you'll kill it before it gets any. It becomes very serious.
Yeah,
and you might only get mild symptoms. So, I've already heard about a few breakthrough cases with some friends, and the symptoms are extraordinarily mild. So it does happen. But I mean, they're not hospitalized. They have a real bad cold, and they keep themselves in isolation to reduce the possibility if there's any spread, if it spreads at all in that instance.
Yeah, or it doesn't mutate, which is another key factor too.
Exactly. So particularly the older population of higher vulnerability, people have been compromised, and keeping your antibody up at all times is more beneficial. Those of us who are younger have better immune systems, made by memory cells kick in, but I suspect, as they move down to age brackets for booster shots, again, I do encourage folks to do that, particularly if anybody that's in compromise in your life.
Yep. As you say, it's free and they're giving it out like water. So there's no excuse.
No excuse. I mean, even though my mom has a higher antibody rate because of a booster shot, I mean, obviously when it comes to me, I'm definitely getting as well to reduce the possibility that I pick it up somewhere and give it to her, even if she has a stronger antibody rate than mine. But why take the risk?
Yeah, it's exactly. We have the option not to, so we should use it for sure. Other places in this world don't have that luxury, and I'm sure they would pay for it.
Yeah, I met with the ambassador in Nepal in October, and they got hit by the Delta variant shortly after India got hit. And you guys also had massive death counts in a very short period of time and infection rates. And we all believe these numbers are uncounted because unfortunately, a person that passes tested properly, and it's a lot of tests to try to prove what's going on. And
yeah,
you have to do multiple tests to get confirmation. So tell people, unless you have to, wasting a test on someone that's passed is probably a waste as opposed to trying to keep somebody alive.
Yeah.
But Nepal actually had a very similar death rate, and the vaccination rate is well below 30%. Yeah. So they're desperate to get vaccine. It's not a wealthy company, not a wealthy country. And the country, the GDP is like something in the area like under $30 billion. I mean, message GDP is like $600 plus billion for perspective. A country has a per capita of about $1,200 a year. So our per capita is like $70,000 a year. So obviously you can tell the different strength of economy and the different strength of economy and living in a very advanced education and technology country, we have access to the vaccine first. Well, talking to the ambassador to Nepal, they're having a hard time saving their own people, under the current circumstances. Mm. So we're blessed. We're very blessed.
Yeah, I know that the current administration in Washington is sensitive to that and is trying, to share. I think the U.S. is the number one sharer of vaccines in the world, but taking care of the United States first, too.
Yeah, obviously, so I've seen it in the news as well. We're getting a lot of criticism from the international community, all the first world countries are, because of the booster issue. The idea that you get a booster reduces the number available. The vaccine manufacturers can only make so fast. And the U.S. continues to be committed as a leader of the world to get other places vaccinated. Again, just point out, reduce mutations, reduce spread, to try to contain this on a global level. Other vaccines like Sinovac, in China and others, Sputnik 5, which, you know, the polling in Russia is very poor on people in Russia want to get Sputnik 5, but it won't let any other vaccine in, uses a similar technology to J&J using inactive virus components to teach your body how to fight out the virus, which is effective, but not nearly as effective as mRNA vaccines of Moderna and Pfizer. Right. So again, I'm not recommending vaccine shopping. They're all effective. But other countries that are using similar technologies, because J&J, I believe, has better technology than the Chinese companies. If you have enough people immunized together in large enough numbers, even if it's not a very high efficacy, meaning higher than 50%, it's got to get over 50%. Mm-hmm. The virus should still be very much contained because it has less places to go and a lower percentage of spread.
Right. Yeah. So we're still in it.
I think we're going to be in this for a while. I do understand that, Canada and Mexico has opened up borders. Flight travel, Europe is opening some borders to us. Singapore has opened a lot of places up. But places like Hong Kong is still requiring quarantine, limited access. China is pretty much very highly limited access to those countries. Be prepared, folks. I mean, keep an eye on if you're going to travel, keep an eye on the perhaps changing a situation depending on how COVID spreads. But countries like Spain, for example, and France, are closing or at the 80% zone. So they're greatly more comfortable in opening the country. But if the US, has a spike in certain areas because of, I'm just tired of talking about this stuff. But I mean, them doing what they're going to do, it may result in other countries closing the doors for us for a period of time until, essentially the spike passes.
Yep, exactly. So all the precautions are, still warranted for sure. But will you be going trick-or-treating, Tacky, is the real question.
I think my dad did owe the trick-or-treat these days.
If you were, what would you go out as?
Oh, I don't know anymore. I did watch Squid Games, and apparently one of the most popular costumes is the henchman in Squid Games.
Ah, okay.
And apparently in Korea, the track suits are selling like hotcakes as we go into the holidays. Right? Yeah, I mean, a lot of our holidays in America, Europe does go everywhere in the world, including things like Halloween. It's not celebrated exactly what we do.
Yeah.
But the idea of wearing costumes and having a party together, is tough. Halloween parties can be fun for adults.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not necessarily unusual for other countries to practice these holidays, but it's not exactly how we do. The other example of exporting of American culture, right? Our gift to the world, things like Halloween.
It's amazing how many people, thought that that TV series, I think it was from the 80s with David Hasselhoff, Baywatch, everybody around the world thought everybody here looked like beautiful lifeguards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I believe that is the highest syndicated show in the world is Baywatch. The second highest one is actually, I think, Green Acres.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then I think somewhere in there is I Love Lucy.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what they depict all Americans as.
Unfortunately, the media portrays what we look like in terms of movies, television, music, and obviously celebrity news articles. Believe it or not, very popular all over the world, celebrity news and sports news. So a lot of impressions of what we have overseas of other people is largely driven by own media, which obviously we've talked about the impact of media and biases against people's race, religion, gender, mm-hmm. et cetera. This occurs to us as Americans as well. If I ever get to travel again, talk to people.
Yeah.
If I ever get to do that again. But I mean, it's interesting how much, other people around the world are very influenced by our own media. And given the global internet and things like that, watching CNN, Fox News, yep. C-SPAN, all the other self-journalists, self-journalism, does influence how people think of us overseas.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it really demonstrates why it's so important to experience things for yourself, before you make a determination or just a broad, generalization of a people or a culture or a country. In journalism, we call it ground truth. It's boots on the ground, see what's happening for yourself.
Yeah, and learning how other people see us. You may feel put off by it, but don't be. because, you know, the only experience of other folks tend to be what they see in the media provided. The same way we only see in the media provided to them. And sometimes it is very flattering. And sometimes it's even even though it is flattering, it's a bit of a misconception.
It's not the norm by any means. That's right.
No, always my favorite is people I find like Red Sox caps in other places. Like, you know, base sports is another thing that transcends borders.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, not every American is a professional athlete or a beautiful lifeguard. Anything else we should let folks know about right now, Tacky?
Oh, obviously, storm damage continuing. I think Quincy's in better shape than most. Power is restoring slowly but steadily. But if you have friends that are deep in the south shore into the Cape, they can be looking at days as they try to remove trees all over the place. And don't touch live wires. You know, make a phone call to 911 as well as, you know, your National Grid or NSTAR or your local DPW to let people know what's going on. It's getting a little chilly. Obviously, checking your neighbors. If you haven't seen them for a little while, to make sure they're okay. But I mean, you know, it's going to be, I think people have to be very patient going to Halloween, unfortunately, regarding power restoration, particularly the deeper in the Cape you go.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
beyond that, you know, just be safe, be well. I mean, we're going to be indoors a little bit more often, but that doesn't mean we can't enjoy ourselves. We just should be, you know, just exercise a degree of caution. And I know we've been relaxing our guard. I see it out there when I go shopping and whatnot. I do see it. But, you know, we're going to be indoors more. You know, the Delta variant is still floating around. Also, as you know, you guys know how to find me, 617-722-2014. Punch a pad number and get to a staffer. And, you know, you can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I do not need to go on anymore too about how much email I get. And, you know, tackychan.org for some phone numbers you can use. And of course, State Representative Tacky Chan for some Facebook posts that may be helpful sometimes, as well as updating you what my life is like. We're doing an executive session on November 1st at 1 p.m. We're going to exec some bills out. So if you want to learn what an executive session looks like, then we'll make some administrative announcements to members of the committee there as well. To give them a sense of what's going on. I have probably three, maybe four hearings we're trying to line up between now and January to try to close out the end of like 300, like 20 or 40 plus bills in committee.
Wow.
And we're going to start dispensing with these bills in negotiation with my co-chair. So if you want to see executive session November 1st on my State Representative Tacky Chan, not Tacky Chan, Facebook, State Representative Tacky Chan, Facebook, it's a public Facebook. You do not have to be a member of Facebook to look at it. And see my co-chair and committee members and the staff as we try to move through getting through a small number of bills on a committee now. And we'll probably have more executive sessions as we continue to agree with my co-chair and what to move up.
All right. Excellent. Appreciate the time as always. And we'll catch up again next week if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely. No, you're my highlight of the week, Joe. My highlight of the week.
Wow, I am honored. Thank you. I will say the same. Happy Halloween.
You too. Happy Halloween, everyone.